What's up, San Diego? Welcome in to Gwen and Chris on this Tuesday afternoon. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby. Chris Ello will join us in a bit, around 4 o'clock, a couple hours from now. Just hanging with Scraby and I until then. Full 4-hour show today. Aztecs go down to the Zags last night. And what was, I don't know if it was, the game never got away from the Aztecs, but they never really quite threatened in that ball game. They go down 80 to 67.
I think there's some positivity to come out of this game.
Yeah.
I know we're talking to Dave Velasquez, assistant coach at 240, so I'm sure he'll have some positivity, but I mean, didn't they beat Baylor by 40? That's not a bad loss to lose to Gonzaga by 13, and they were right there for a second. They just couldn't get over that hump.
Yeah, never quite made it
reachable.
I don't know, reachable is not there. They didn't put the pressure on Gonzaga.
And that's what Brian Dutcher said after.
It never quite got there. And so, but it was a good measuring stick for the Aztecs. I think it's important to remember, this is a very, very young Aztec team. I know they got a few seniors on this ball club, some of which are hurt right now in Waters right now. So, you know, they're out there doing it with a lot of youth. And at times that showed last night. I'd be interested to hear what Coach Velasquez has to say on what he and the staff saw from last night's game. But I do think there's some positives you can take from that game. I know Miles Byrd was questionable going into that game. He ended up playing, but he certainly looked like that ankle was affecting him a little bit last night. He ended up with no buckets or no points, and that's something, you know, I don't think you expect from Miles Byrd. I think he's kind of come into his own here, really trying to approach this season as one of the leaders this year, even if he's only, a redshirt sophomore, I believe. So, like I said, there's definitely some positives you can pull from it.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell it's a young team sometimes because they got into the bonus early in the first half, and they weren't able to get to the line as much as they should have.
Yeah, they weren't able to take advantage.
A veteran team, I think, would probably find some more ways to get on the line, but that's nitpicking, really.
Yeah. You saw, as I said, Magoon Gwaff got some minutes in that. He goes scoreless. Miles Byrd goes scoreless. And so, this isn't the healthiest San Diego State team, yet they still fought hard. They gave up 40 points in both halves. It's not something you typically see in terms of how well the team shot it. I think, you know, for the most part, the Aztecs, you know, I don't think they were able to kind of impose their will defensively,
yeah,
like we're used to seeing them do. I think Gonzaga shot 41% in the first half. They shot 43% in the second half. Typically, from an Aztec team, you see them keep teams under 40%, and then that gets better in the second half in a lot of time. So,
and then what did Dutch say about Gonzaga? They probably didn't forget the year before when,
yeah, right, yes,
when the Aztecs went up there.
All of these guys
are
returning. All of Gonzaga was returning from last year's whooping that the Aztecs put on them.
I mean, Brian Dutcher, he said it a lot after the game. You know, Brian Dutcher's super honest, and he was like, going into the game, we knew it was going to be really tough. So he was just happy to see them play the way that they did, even though they were down a couple guys, down their better players as well. And Gonzaga's not a bad team. They're going to be going deep into the tournament.
Aztecs got out rebounded by 13. You know, that's you know, a spot where, you know, you'd like to be, keep it a little bit closer, especially in a game where you probably are undermanned a little bit.
They also had two guys go out due to cramping.
Yeah. Cramping is a...
I don't know what is going on.
It's an epidemic around the country.
When you were playing professional sports, did you get enough fluids?
I did. I mean, there were maybe like a handful of times throughout my entire time playing sports where I caught a cramp. Never, I can remember, in game. Be like in bed in the middle of the night after I've been like dehydrated from playing, and I might catch one, but never in mid-game. I'll be fortunate from that standpoint.
I'm not going to discount that it probably does not feel great. It's just very strange how some of these athletes cannot figure out a way to stay hydrated.
I think a lot of it is sweat. Like when there, you know, certain people perspirate a lot more than others.
And me.
You see the guys on the field all the time who have the salt marks in their hat.
Joe.
Those are guys that sweat a little bit more. And sometimes when you're keeping up that kind of pace and you're sweating like that, it's tough to keep the fluids, enough fluids to keep you from cramping. But clearly it's not something that happens to everybody.
They need Bobby Boucher, the water boy. They need him to be the water boy because no one would ever have a cramp if he was the water boy.
But certainly Dave Velasquez to join us in the 2 o'clock hour, Matt Snyder in the 5 o'clock hour, Chris Ello, hopefully, in the 4 o'clock hour. The Aztecs are on the road not tonight, but tomorrow they play, right?
I believe so, yeah. The California Baptist, Braden told me before I left.
CBU.
He said, don't call them Cal Baptist, which is what I was going to call them. Apparently, they don't like it. So, California Baptist. I thought Riverside was much further, so it's only like 2 hours. Right, so that's where he's going.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll be on at like 4-ish, 4 to 4:30, and then he's going to take us the rest of the way. We have a Chris's Fantabulous Sports Game Show.
Should be fun, as always. Cowboys, we got to talk about them a little bit. I mean,
what about how bad they are?
They're real bad.
I want to dance all over the
Cowboy grave.
Yes, but I can't because my team stinks too.
Yeah, your team is not very good either.
So they're 5-5, but they're looking better than the Cowboys. Now this whole
stadium is falling apart.
This whole thing is crazy because I finally saw video of the little piece of sheet metal falling to the ground, and although it was like a feather in the wind falling, it wasn't falling fast. There was a guy that had to get out of the way, and I'm sure it wouldn't have felt good. But the shots of everyone standing on the field, like Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy, staring up at the ceiling like they have something to do with it, is hilarious. But they had the NFL had them go up there, a stadium employee, and had to secure another piece of sheet metal to something so that they could continue playing the game. They had to keep the roof closed. But they had this shot of the guy who was fixing it. Like, how do these people do it, Tony? I don't understand how you can go up there and do that.
Every time I go to a stadium and I look up, especially a stadium that has it's a roof that opens and closes.
Yeah.
And I look up and I see that catwalk. Ugh. I ask myself, who on God's green earth wants to do that for a living? I certainly am not one.
When I grew up in the Bay Area,
I would be so incapable of I would be army crawling across, because that just standing up from those type of heights would I wouldn't be able to stay straight.
I wouldn't be able to do it either. When I was a kid, I used to see those guys walk up the Golden Gate Bridge on those little, you know, the things that go back up towards the top, Tony. Those guys walking up towards the top, like, that is incredibly scary. There's also a movie that I started to watch and I couldn't do it, but it's about these two girls that get caught on the top of a radio tower and they have no way down and they're like extreme climbers or something. I started watching this movie and most of it's on the top of this radio tower.
No shot.
Couldn't do it.
No
could not
shot.
Do it. That is one thing that I'm feeling right now is like the anxiety of being on top of a radio tower, Tony.
Yeah, no, that sounds horrifying. Now, there has been some good news in terms of the Roky Sasaki news. If you remember, we talked about it last week, that there is a certain Rays are hoping that he is posted, meaning that he is made available.
It's like after December 12th.
It is, I think, something around. I think it's earlier than that, actually.
Okay, I'm going to go. I know we have it in my notes from last week.
Why don't you check that as I get into this good news? Ken Rosenthal wrote an article today in The Athletic.
December 2nd.
It's December 2nd. Wrote an article in The Athletic today talking about how some of the Latin players are going to be the unintended consequence that, you know, who maybe have been given verbal agreements that a deal is coming down. If their team actually then turns to Sasaki, those agreements will go up in smoke. That being said, the reason why this is good news is because it has been said that it is highly likely that Roky Sasaki will be posted after December 2nd, which makes life so much easier for the Padres. Remember, they spent pretty much all of their international money on
I believe the exact number is $2,200
left. That's what they have left.
Yes.
Don't think that's going to get a Sasaki. Just have this sneaky suspicion that $2,500.
Not even $2,500. $2,200.
Is not going to seal the deal.
He can't even afford a studio in PB for that.
Yeah, he can't afford a lot out here.
Yeah, exactly.
He might be staying with you or I at that point.
I'll take it. If he comes to San Diego, he can come hang out.
That being said, if he is posted after December 2nd, the clock starts over. Basically, yes. The money is replenished.
$6.2 million is what they have.
$6.2 million they have to go out and try to lure Sasaki here to San Diego. So it sounds like that is exactly what's going to happen, which made sense the whole time. I said that last week when we were talking about it. It would be in his best interest as well as the team he's on best interest to do it after, because more suitors would be available. The Padres certainly weren't the only team that had already spent their international money.
Yeah, correct.
And if he wants to have all options available to him, you might as well wait till after the second, where everybody's money's replenished.
Now, I'm just seeing so many, and maybe I'm just really aware.
I shouldn't say replenished. It's not like somebody's going in there and like, all right, here's your six points. It's just they can now spend that money.
Yes, yes. But I get what you're saying by replenished, because it kind of is replenished. It's not being able to be used.
It's not like MLB's coming by each bite.
Rob Manfred's not giving him a sack.
And is like, here you go, 6.5 here, 6.5 here. Oh, you got a little bit left over from last year. Here's your 6.5.
Oh, yes. I do love the magic. Rob Manfred doing that. Maybe I'm just like super aware of what's going on with the Dodgers and stuff, but it's like everybody, oh, it's a done deal. He's to the Dodgers.
I think that's
speculation at its finest.
That is the default now. I think Dodgers, when any free agent is available, be based on their success in free agency over the last 4 years, right? It's three out of 4 years. You'd say you're going to default to the team that usually spends the most and has had the success.
They're meeting with Juan Soto today, too.
Just remember, it wasn't that long ago where the Padres had what, three consecutive off seasons of signing a free agent, a big time free agent.
Yeah, but no one was ever like,
yeah, it is,
hey,
certainly going to the
Padres. The Padres have it. It's a done deal.
That's fair.
No one's ever said that. It's always been Dodgers or Yankees,
No one has ever said that is the truest thing ever said. That is absolute fact.
Like if Juan Soto goes to the Dodgers, I don't know how they're going to handle this in the next CBA, because something would have to happen.
If what now?
If Soto signs with the Dodgers.
No, nothing. What do you mean?
In the next CBA, they got to make something where the deferrals don't make sense.
They're going to single out the Dodgers specifically and say, Dodgers, you guys can't do this.
I know it sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud.
it sounds crazy.
And I know that all players have the option to do the whole deferral thing. And I know that the Dodgers are paying like $45 million a year on the luxury tax for Shohei Ohtani, but this is allowing them to sign all these players or even be mentioned with all these players.
This has anything to do with it, actually. Roky Sasaki is getting paid out of a completely different fund.
You're right about that.
So it has really nothing to do with the deferral.
I'm glad we worked through this because you're right.
Maybe the Soto
thing is where I was going.
Has more.
I read that Sasaki might not want to be like third fiddle to Shohei Yamamoto.
I didn't just hear that. I also heard that he, you know, just from a standpoint of privacy, he's not really into, you know, some of the same stuff.
San Diego's more, pretty good. People will leave you alone.
Yeah, no, they'll leave you alone for sure.
Maybe.
You won't have paparazzis or anything like that chasing after you or anything.
No,
like
especially because he's trying to find a place to live for $2,200, you know. It's not easy. Not easy for Roky.
All right, let's get to break. We'll dive further into the Jackson Merrill situation.
I'm just getting over it.
Well, I mean, I think more has come to light with the PPI. We explained it a little bit yesterday, but you start to see, well, you're not starting to see. There has been some impact, or will be some impact, because of the way the awards were handed out. We'll discuss on the other side. More Gwen and Chris. I'm going to have to deal with Chris's camera today.
His camera is possessed.
It literally is. It turns its head, it spins its head around.
Like the Exorcist.
Like the Exorcist. So, welcome in, Gwen and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Chris Elwell, joining us in the 4 o'clock hour, hopefully. Matt Snyder in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to be grilling him a little bit.
Oh, his feet are going to be a cheetah
fire. His feet will be held to the heat.
Yes.
As he was one of the East Coast members that, although often is praising the Padres.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been one of the first ones. There was a bandwagon ever created. He was one of the first on it. Before the Padres actually got to full potential.
He likes talking positively about the Padres.
He does. But he did not like Jackson Merrill as the first place
rookie
of the year. We'll get to hear his perspective, what he saw. And I'd certainly plan on telling him, and he gave his vote away in our last conversation that we had with him. I knew from his voice.
From his voice. We all did.
The tone changed when we brought it up.
Because at a certain point, he was the Jackson Merrill is the rookie of the year. And then, like you said, it just kind of changed. And I don't know what changed.
I wonder if, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he knew he had to vote the whole time, so. Never mind. let's get into this. Some of the consequences.
Yeah, because it actually works against the Pirates.
We'll get to the Pirates in a sec. Dennis Lynn, a friend of the show that we have on here from time to time, wrote an excellent article today in The Athletic, kind of highlighting what the... Is it PPI? Is what it's called?
PPI, yes.
The PPI. Could you give me the exact, what is PPI breakdown for me, please?
It is, now you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah,
I just read it earlier.
I knew
it's
you
player
had
performance in not index. Gosh, now you're putting me on the spot. Let me see.
Prospect
promotion incentive. So I wasn't right at all.
Nope, you were completely wrong. Bearer
same thing,
of misinformation.
Though. Same thing, though. Player performance, prospect promotion, same thing. Same thing.
Yeah, I guess so, if you want to go that route. Nonetheless, Dennis Lynn wrote a really a terrific article kind of highlighting that Jackson Merrill is exactly what the PPI was made for. Right, it encourages teams to bring up their young prospects now, not try to manipulate it, which is what the Pirates did and were banged for. We'll get to that in a sec. But Jackson Merrill, you know, by the way, is still eligible for the PPI next year. It's not just in your rookie season. So if, you know, Jackson Merrill one-ups this year and is third in the MVP race as my guy for the Royals is
Bobby Witt Jr.
Bobby Witt Jr. is likely to be.
Mm-hmm.
Royals will get that compensation pick. He'll get a little bit of extra change, and he'll get a full service. Paul Skeens, we'll get to that in a second,
is gonna
end up actually being rewarded. Remember, Pirates manipulated his time.
Remind everybody what that means, because I know we talked a lot about it during the Fernando Tatis Jr. days.
Right. Padres did not and have really a track record at this point under A.J. Preller of not manipulating service time and bringing guys up when they think they can help.
And manipulation of service time is?
Is basically keeping a guy in the minor leagues past a certain date so that he doesn't, at least in the old rules, would not get full credit for that year. Meaning that pushes arbitration a year further back, which means you get to hang on to the product.
It's a way for owners to be cheap.
It's a way to be cheap, and it's a way to keep the services at a low price for longer, right?
It's a way for owners not to reward their players, too.
Exactly. And so the Padres have a chance to be rewarded. They aren't at this point, right? Jackson Merrill was up the full season. They were in the area of being able to be rewarded.
He might be the poster boy for why this was created. Not that he was in mind, but his situation.
He's not the poster boy for why
to talk about.
He's not the poster boy for why it's created. Poster boy for why it's created is Chris Bryant when he was with the Cubs. Remember, I don't know if you remember, they manipulated his service time and it ended up pushing him back a further year, and you've seen the kind of injuries that have kind of taken place in that time. But he was quite upset about it. That's what really got the ball rolling.
So in the new
CBA. It had been an intentional thing for quite some time. It was just like the secret that wasn't a secret, right? If teams keep you down till May 28th, it will bring you up. You're just 2 days past the deadline of being able to get full service time for it. Now we get to keep you an extra year. Boom.
But the incentive was for the Padres to get this pick by bringing Jackson Merrill to the opening day roster.
That's the incentive, but that's not what the Padres have in mind when they're doing it.
Yeah.
They're doing it because, man, Jackson Merrill's a good ball player. He can help us win a lot of games. Let's bring him up. That's why they're doing it. Now, if he ends up balling and staying up the whole year and being a successful call-up, guess what? You have a chance to be rewarded for that. In the Pirates case, they manipulated Paul Skene's time. They'll keep that extra. They thought they were going to keep that extra year.
Yeah.
But as it turns out, he was so good that because he is the rookie of the year, he'll get credit for that full service time. And they could have just brought him up in April and not had to deal with this. Now he's going to actually be treated as if he was called up from the beginning anyway. They don't get that extra year of service time.
And they will not receive a bonus pick.
And they don't receive the bonus pick.
So this works against the 100%. Pirates.
Because they didn't call him up from the beginning of the season, they don't get they're ineligible for the PPI incentive pick.
A first-round pick is a pretty big deal.
It's actually in between the first in the second round. It used to be what they called a sandwich pick. So it's like
baseball's so weird with all their different rules, I gotta say. It's 100-plus years of trying to figure this out.
There are basically some picks. It's not all 30 teams get picks in this area, but there are a few teams that get picks in between the last pick of the first round and the first pick of the second round.
Ron has an interesting point. Curious if this was an MLBPA rule or owner's rule. MLBPA voted for Merrill as Rookie of the Year. Also, why not the top rookie of the year who started the season? Well,
MLBPA, or the Major League Baseball Players Association, wanted, remember, going back to the collective bargain agreement, they wanted to make it so that you didn't have to be with an organization for 7 years. They wanted to shrink that.
Yeah.
This was the compromise. All right.
The owners were
nah, we're not doing that. But here's what we can do. We'll incentivize teams bringing their young studs up early. We'll also allow them, these rookies, if they are a rookie of the year or one of the top tier prize winners, they can make bonus money where that wasn't the case before. So it was kind of a compromise. They kind of gave a tiny, tiny bit. But that's how this all came about. The MLBPA was pushing to shrink the years before you become a free agent. Owners were like, nah, we're not doing that. This is what you got for it.
It does seem like it takes a long time for a baseball player to get to a point where they're making like real money. I know that they're making real money, but real money.
Is that to weed out? For a small percentage, it's 2+ years. Those are what they call super twos. Those guys will reach arbitration after their second year. But it's a small percentage. Everybody else has to wait till 3 years. In that time frame, you basically got to be a dude. You got to be a dude that's playing every day or out there close to every day or playing a lot, getting a lot of ABs. Because by the time you go to arbitration, it actually has to be – you have to actually have built a workload, basically.
Yeah, you got to know what you're
going to
bring
them. And that's the tough part. Can you get through those 3 years? When you get to that part, that's when you start to get the increases. Then can you continue to produce? Because you still got another 3 before you get the free agency.
And then you get the free agency, and if you're really good, you'll get paid.
You're going to get paid. That's the goal. My dad always used to say, man, don't haggle over draft compensation because you can't make any real money till you get to big leagues anyway. So you might as well start the journey ASAP. All right, let's get to break. Now is the time. We get to talk a little college basketball. David Velazquez, coach, assistant coach for the Aztecs men's team, will join us here shortly, right here on Gwen and Chris.
Ben and Woods on the Fan.
2:37 here on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Chris Ella will join us in the 4 o'clock hour. Coach Dave Velazquez joining us here shortly. Aztecs go down last night, 80-67, to the Zags, number 4 team in the nation. Game never got in chase down distance, if you will. But Aztecs kept it relatively competitive all game.
Yeah.
This was not a healthy Aztec ball club by any stretch. But nonetheless, there are no moral victories in sports, and the Aztecs get their first loss of the season.
It's great.
I always try to find the moral victory.
You seem like a moral victory type of guy.
Yeah, but then I realize how dumb I am for thinking about the moral victory, because like you said, there are no moral victories in the records. You know, it's win or loss. But they have a lot. They have a pretty tough schedule coming up for them.
Yeah, this is the beginning.
Yeah, this is just the beginning, because they're going to go to Vegas and play in this tournament against some of those good teams. And it just doesn't get any easier.
No, just to kind of put the exclamation point, they head to Vegas. They're guaranteed to face Creighton, who
is number 14.
Top 15. You got Oregon after that, and then TBA could be another one of the top tier teams that are in that tournament. Fresno State, San Diego State, University of San Diego,
California Baptist.
I was told that is not acceptable.
That is true.
And then you start getting into the conference schedule, which we know by now is usually one of the tougher, conferences in all of basketball, all of college basketball.
Do you think, because of the recent success, we just have a big expectation that they're going to be Sweet 16 every year from here on out? It's part of being successful is that people now expect you to be successful. But like with the Aztecs football team, I didn't think they were going to be great, but I didn't think they were going to be 3-7.
Does it feel like that to you, that if the Aztecs don't get to a Sweet 16?
Oh, to me?
I don't know that it feels like that to me.
It probably doesn't.
Maybe because we're three games in? Maybe that's possibly why, 4 games in?
It probably doesn't, though, because this team is not as star-studded than the past couple years with Lamont Butler and Matt Bradley.
Sure.
And so I don't think that it's fair for us to expect a Sweet 16 run, but
I don't have any expectations.
Every year.
I don't have any expectations as of yet. You know, I think this was a good, as I said, measuring stick point for the Aztecs in terms of us on the outside looking at this team. How good can they be? You definitely saw some flashes of a team that could be really good in that ball game last night. Creighton's another big test. I mean, you go from number 4 in the nation to number 14 in the nation. And this is a team that Aztecs have some history.
They do.
I think they lost a game to them in the...
It was a hard loss, too.
Was that in the tournament?
It was in the tournament a couple years ago.
They bounced back. They beat them in a...
tournament
game.
They also beat them in a regular season game, too, that year, I believe. You have a better memory than I.
They faced them early in a tournament in Iowa. The Aztecs have some history. That matchup is November 26th, so it's about a week away from today. The Aztecs will have their next challenge ahead of them. All right, let's get to our interview for the day. Coach Dave Velazquez, San Diego State's assistant coach, joins us here on Gwen and Chris. Coach Velazquez, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you on. Let's start with last night. A tough loss to a very, very good basketball team. I mean, from a staff point of view, you go into this game, you're not at your full strength, but there are certain things you want to see. What was it that you guys saw as a staff that was encouraging? What was it from a staff standpoint that you guys know you got to keep at a little bit?
Oh, there's a lot of things you learned from last night. I mean, obviously, we went into the game, like you had mentioned, that we're not at full strength. And then the game starts, and Miles Bird was banged up before the game had started, and then he's not even available. you know, for basically half the game. And then Farrell Compton, who gave us really good minutes in the first half, he's only able to play 13 minutes, and he starts, you know, cramping up. And then you have Magoon Gwath, who has foul trouble and has to play limited minutes with his five fouls. So, you know, we don't have that many guys available. It's hard to beat anybody, then especially one of the best teams in the country, and especially a top five team at home with that's the most experienced team in the country. And
yeah.
The last time we had a really experienced team like that, we went to a national championship game.
Yeah.
And that's how important the experience in college basketball has become, and especially nowadays in this new world that we're living in with the transfer portal. And so, yeah, we ran into a very, very good Gonzaga team, and they did a lot of good things against us that we're going to learn from, and we're going to grow from, and we're going to steal some things that they did that helped them be successful, and we're going to put it in our own systems that we do. So, yeah, we learned a lot, though, and you always want to learn through winning. That's the number one thing San Diego State has done throughout the years. You know, this is not the first time we had expectations. We've been good for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And we expected to go into that game and win that game. There's no question about it. But at the end of the day, you have to try to learn through winning. And unfortunately, from last night, we have to learn through losing, which is okay, especially with this team that we have. You know, like Coach Dutch talked about after, it's not always going to go your way every single night. You know, there's not going to be a lot of teams that go undefeated throughout the season. But as long as we learn from our mistakes last night, as long as we grow, then at the end of the day, you move on, and we know what our schedule is, and that's if you want to be a top 25 program, if you want to be considered one of the elites, these are the type of schedules you play, and that's what our players signed up for when they came to San Diego State, and we expect to win these games.
We're talking to SDSU assistant men's basketball coach Dave Velasquez here on 97.3 The Fan, and I don't know if you were listening to us just before you came on, but I asked the question of expectations among fans, and if the fans, you know, fans probably expect this team to go deep into the tournament every year, which is a good thing because it means you guys are good every single year, but do you feel fan expectations?
I've been here for 23 years. Our expectations are never going to be lower than the fans.
Okay. You know,
We have the highest of expectations, but in this new world, if you want to talk about fan expectations, I mean, that comes with the price.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's just the real world. You know, I did hear you guys mention the football team. Well, at the end of the day, this NIL world is real.
Yeah.
So, I mean, fans' expectations at times, not with our team. I'm not talking about us. We need all the help we can get, and we love our fans, and our fans are part of the reasons why our players come to San Diego State. I mean, Fayhouse Arena last night was absolutely rocking.
Yeah.
I mean, to be in that environment, to have that environment, it's one of the best in the country. It's arguably the best on the West Coast. I mean, Fayhouse Arena is a special place to play. And with this NIL world, we've had some support. We need more support, but that's just the world we live in nowadays. That's every college program across the country.
Coach Velasquez, you know, as we're sitting here talking, and you mentioned, you know, the kind of the youth that you have on this roster, you know, I go back to the first half of last night's game. You guys get into the bonus pretty early, but aren't able to quite get to the line to kind of take advantage of that. Is that a sign of the youth that you have in there, or is that just kind of how the game was called there after that point?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit – it's not just the youthfulness. I think it's the more the amount of time together.
Okay.
You know, I think when we get to that situation in January, it's not necessarily going to be the youthfulness. It's going to be more of kind of, all right, we can get this guy in this position, this space to go get fouled.
Mm.
You know, or, okay, instead of this mid-range, maybe I'm going to get to the rim and force myself to get to the foul line. I mean, to me, it's one of those things where at the end of the day, we played one real Division I game before last night.
Right.
So not only are we have a little bit of youthfulness amongst our team and trying to add so many new pieces. I mean, this is the most new pieces that we've ever added to a San Diego State team since 98, 99 when Coach Fisher took over.
Right.
I mean, this is about as new as we've ever been. We've usually been, like I had mentioned earlier, the more experienced teams. You know, we've had so much experience coming back. So this is all new, and it's something that we're going to continue to grow from. But, yeah, I think as we go along, I think it'll be easier to get to the foul line than it was last night when we didn't. You know, we drew those really early fouls early in the game.
Coach Dave Velasquez joins us here on Gwen and Chris, assistant men's basketball coach. And, Coach Velasquez, you know, you talked about, and we're all seeing it, we're all seeing the landscape change in all of college sports. And one of the things we've come to know for a fact is that a San Diego State Aztec men's basketball team usually starts to crystallize after the new year, you know, coming in January, February. Does that message get harder when you're having to bring in so many new faces? Because as you said, this used to be a university that you guys were usually the most experienced. And so having to hammer that in there may not been as such big task, but with so many new faces, you know, is that message harder to get across to the young men?
Well, now we have a really coachable group. That's one of the things. You know, you talk about the transfers that came in here. They all came in here to win.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was Nick Boyd playing against us in the Final Four and saw the type of winning program we had, how we played, how together we were, our chemistry, or Jared Coleman-Jones, who came from Middle Tennessee State, and before that was Northwestern, he had not gone to the NCAA tournament. He wants to go. You know, Wayne McKinney from down the street, he wants to go. He wants to play in the NCAA tournament. So you have all these guys, plus the freshmen and the new guys, along with the guys coming back. I mean, this team, you come here to win. So it's easy to, you know, I don't want to say it's easy, but they understand – you know, the task at hand, which is we have to win. And yeah, we are going to play our best basketball in January and February. I think if you look it up, I think Coach Dutcher and Bill Self are the two winningest coaches in the last 8 years in February. I mean, our teams have gotten better and better throughout the season, and we're not expecting anything different from this year. But our teams also understand that there is a, when you come to San Diego State, not only do you come here to win, you're expected to win. And you know, that's what our mindset is moving forward. And, you know, getting to watch film with half the team today, and we had the day off from practice, but the guys stopped by the office and, you know, nobody's happy. You know, there's no moral victories here. The job is to win every game we play. But at the same time, we learned a lot of great lessons last night.
What is it about Coach Dutch that seemingly attracts these type of players? I mean, because at least from the outside looking at it, it doesn't seem like the type of mindset that frequents San Diego State's men's basketball program is a mindset that is out there in abundance. But yet the Aztecs seem to find these guys that fit. What is it about this program and about Coach Dutch and the staff that seemingly attracts these type of players?
You know, I think a lot of people just want to be treated the right way. Mm. And at the same time, they want to be held accountable and also be a part of something special. And Coach Dutcher, the way he can handle, whether we had won last night or lost last night, I could be the first to tell you, being around him this long, he'd be the same person no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't ride this crazy roller coaster ride. And for players, and you've been there before, you've had managers in the past that, when you guys are winning a hot streak, you think you're the greatest hitter and outfielder in the world. And then when you guys are playing bad, you know, you're the worst. I mean, he's never likes that. And I think players, starts to kind of, that reputation gets out there, especially from former guys and guys that have been around him. He's about as normal of a head coach as you can be in any sport, and especially in college basketball. And he's just a great person, high character. And our guys, you know, the families, they want their kids to be around that, you know, and their sons. And so, it's there's a lot, but the winning culture is probably number one, and then just Coach Dutcher, who he is as a person, and you know, we try to all carry ourselves that way.
We're talking to Coach Velasquez, assistant men's basketball coach for San Diego State, and I wanted to ask, because you were saying that the team is pretty young right now. Is it almost easier to coach up a bunch of younger players, or is it easier to deal with the veterans who you can teach in a different way? Because I'm a little curious about which side is easier to get through to.
You know, I think it's always easier to get through to the veterans, because for the most part, at least in a program like ours, they've had success.
Yeah.
You know, so when you're not having success, you can always point to, well, here's you at the best version of yourself. And you can almost show them in the same situation, in the same jersey, you know, with the same coaching staff. With a new team, you know, they come in wide-eyed, but a lot of times you don't know what you don't know. And so some of the situations we were in last night was the first time we were in that situation together. And the way we asked them to guard defensively and how hard that is, and then offensively how we want them to play, it's a lot of times with the new guys, they're just, you don't know what you don't know, and that's not their fault. And that's why most teams that are experienced and together, they have early success, especially this time of the year. But as the year goes on, once teams get, you know, 10 to 12 to 15 games under their belt, then they start to find a rhythm. They've learned a lot of, you know, lessons throughout the year that we've been mentioning. And at that point, you can get to them. With the veteran team, like a last year's team, you know, hey, Darion, I remember how you looked and when you took us to a Final Four and you were the South Regional MVP. That ain't that person right now. You know, like, you know, you can kind of point to those things a little bit easier. And even, you know, and there's other guys. You know, I use Nathan Mensa as an example for our new guys all the time. You know, I felt like Nathan at times would just be like, oh, I'll let this ball in the post. I know he can't score on me. But it's like, well, when the ball goes in the post, then we have to shrink. We have to do all these things. Nathan, keep the ball out of the post.
Right.
And you got to show him games where he had kept the ball out of the post. So.
That is funny.
It's a little bit easier on the coach veteran teams.
It's like when I have to coach up Chris or something. I have to bring Chris and Tony. I have to bring back the audio and say, yes, you guys did say this.
Coach, well, listen, we you know, every time we can get you on here, we'd love to have you. I know we fell a little bit short, but there's certainly a lot to be excited about the San Diego Aztec basketball team. And we know as we get to the new year, we'll start to see it all come together. We'll catch up with you sometime in the future and appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, appreciate you guys and go Aztecs.
Indeed. Go Aztecs. Coach Dave Velasquez, San Diego State assistant men's basketball coach, joining us and dropping some jewels as usual. I wanted to, as we ran out of time, I wanted to ask him, you know, what excites him the most about this particular team? Because he typically has something different. And all these teams present in a different way. And you got a mix of transfers, a mix of young guys, and you go up against a team like Gonzaga. As he said, you only know what you know at that point. And for a bunch of guys who were in that game last night, it was their first time being in those type of situations.
It was interesting that he said it's easier to coach the veterans because, like, when I was in radio, I came in and I knew nothing about radio. And that person who helped me through my career taught me their way. And so it was, like, almost easier for them to get me to do what I needed to do. But the veterans, that is funny that you have to prove to them sometimes that, you
and
know,
they,
look.
They have it in their database, too.
Yeah,
like,
they
can kind of look back and like, I wasn't.
I'm not that
guy right now. I need to get back to being that guy.
And there's so much mental, not warfare.
No, that's exactly what it's called. That's exactly what it is.
You have to play a certain game as a coach.
You got to figure out the right buttons to push. Some guys can be motivated like that. Some guys can't be motivated. And as a coach, your job is to figure out how that particular player is motivated. And Coach Dutch is seemingly one of the best out there doing
it
right
now. He's a case-by-case basis guy.
Yeah, he is. That's
how
it should be. You can't treat everybody the same. All right, first hour in the can, second hour on the way, little Daily Gambit. We'll see how our betting chops work.
Eek.
More Gwen and Chris.